You are tuned in to Copyright Chat.
We are going to talk about our recent experience with the U.S. Copyright Office Sovereign Immunity Roundtables.
Copyright Chat is a podcast dedicated to discussing important copyright matters. Host Sarah Benson, the copyright librarian from the University of Illinois, converses with experts from across the globe to engage the public with rights issues relevant to their daily lives.
Welcome to another episode of Copyright Chat. Today, I am joined by Douglas Shantz, who's from our University Council at University of Illinois, and we are going to talk about our recent experience with the U.S. Copyright Office Sovereign Immunity Roundtables. Welcome to the show, Douglas.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Pleasure to be here.
So last Friday, we participated in hearings with the Copyright Office. It was a very long day. I sat through all of the hearings. They started at 9 a.m. and went until about 5 p.m. And let's give the listeners a little bit of background about what was going on there. Do you want to give some background, Douglas?
Sure, happy to. The precipitating event seems to really be the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Allen v. Cooper, which was issued in March of this year. And that decision found unconstitutional the federal law that had allowed private copyright holders to sue state governments for copyright infringement. And it resulting from that, then two U.S. senators sent a letter to the U.S. Copyright Office basically instructing them to study the extent of copyright infringement activity by state governments in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Allen v. Cooper.
Right. And from what I gathered from the decision, the Supreme Court did not rule out the subject of getting rid of sovereign immunity for government actors, but for copyright infringement in particular, but said that the underlying evidence used to pass the law that was at issue in Allen v. Cooper was not strong enough to support getting rid of sovereign immunity. Is that your understanding too?
That's a good characterization. Yeah, the Supreme Court's decision focused in on a test that was actually developed in another decision after this law was passed in 1990. And that decision refers to congruence and proportionality. And what it's basically saying is that if Congress is going to take the fairly extreme step of abrogating part of state sovereign immunity under the 11th Amendment of the Constitution, that they need to justify it in some way. They need that the measures that Congress takes to abrogate the state sovereign immunity rights needs to be both congruent to the acts that are being performed, and that the measures that Congress is taking are proportional to the acts that the state governments are taking that are appear to be wrong, unlawful, or somehow damaging. The interesting thing in this Allen v. Cooper case is that they spent a lot of time talking about the proportionality component, but didn't spend a lot of time on the congruence component. And it really is a two-part test. So it'll be interesting to see as what is likely to be continued efforts in Congress to kind of revive some version of this law to provide an avenue for private copyright holders to sue states, if they remember that there's two parts to this test. Obviously the proportionality part is really the more important one, that you're not providing this kind of sweeping access to the courts, to the federal courts, for private copyright holders to sue the states. And that really seemed to be the issue in the Allen v. Cooper case, was that it had just really opened the door wide open for private copyright holders to sue state governments for infringement.
And I think the other thing that I took away from that line of cases was that in order to abrogate sovereign immunity, the acts of infringement, the evidence that you need, I guess, needs to be shown to be intentional or reckless and widespread. So that is what I was kind of focused on in terms of the evidence that was presented during those hearings. And in my mind, I didn't see that kind of evidence showing, if even if there was some intentional, let's say, infringement by individual, what we would call rogue actors at universities, it's not widespread, and nor is it sanctioned by the university. Do you think that that matters in this case?
I do think that matters, and I think that was really a core part of the Supreme Court's finding in the Allen v. Cooper case, is that that Congress passed the law allowing private copyright holders to sue states, but put nothing into the congressional record in terms of a congressional finding of this kind of widespread sort of reckless, intentional infringement by state governments that would have provided the necessary justification under this congruence and proportionality test to carve into the 11th Amendment state sovereign immunity rights. And so just for my benefit, when you're talking about the hearings, are you talking about the roundtable discussion or something different?
Yeah. In my mind, I keep calling them hearings, and I know it was really a roundtable discussion, but it seemed to me that the Copyright Office was really trying to gather up evidence of some sort of infringement by state governments or potential for that, that they could use to demonstrate to Congress that this is a problem, right? And what I saw is that there were some instances, and I certainly felt badly for people, especially Alan from Alan v. Cooper. I think it was Alan, right, who showed up? Or was
That's
yeah.
right.
And I feel badly for him because, of course, he was mistreated by the government in that case. If you read the facts about, you know, him taking video and photographs, I think it was video and photographs of Blackbeard's ship wreck and the state kind of taking that without giving him due credit and payment. I do feel badly, but at the same time, that is not enough to abrogate sovereign immunity for everyone. And I think what I noted the most was how strong the evidence was on the side of folks from universities saying, hey, we're out here educating our users. We have, you know, strong copyright policies. We take matters seriously when people assert infringement, and we don't take this lightly. And so it seemed to me that there were instances, of course, of copyright infringement, but they were actually few and far between, which to me does not meet that proportionality test, right? So it'll be interesting to see what the Copyright Office says about the hearings or the discussions, right? Because I suspect, given what they've done in the past, that they will find that there is evidence of infringement going on, and that use whatever they can dig up, if you will, to kind of justify it. And I don't personally see that it was justified during that day of testimony.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really accurate characterization in general. I mean, so in the Allen v. Cooper case, you have, you know, normally if you're going to try to press a claim like this all the way up to the Supreme Court, you want the most sympathetic case you can have. And in this case, the North Carolina state government didn't have a particularly sympathetic position that they were in, as you said. You know, they weren't sort of an incidental or negligent copyright infringer in that case. They really didn't paint themselves as particularly sympathetic. And the court found still in their favor because of the lack of sort of a finding by Congress that justified cutting into a constitutional right of the states. And so in the wake of that, you have this letter again from two U.S. senators to the Copyright Office that kind of kicked off this process that resulted most recently in the in these roundtables. And that letter states explicitly that they're asking the Copyright Office. They start by saying that the senators, quote, have heard from affected copyright owners that in recent years, state infringements of copyright have become much more common. And so you can already see that they're really starting to set the stage for that the finding is already there, right? They've already kind of made the case in their own minds that this is a problem, a widespread and growing problem of state governments infringing copyright. And then the Copyright Office starts the process of a study by issuing the series of questions, and that's where you and I first collaborated on behalf of the university to submit a public comment. And, you know, the nature of the questions don't really get to, except until later on, the nature of the questions from the Copyright Office that they pose to the public are really still more about narrow, specific instances of copyright infringement and not getting at any sort of evidence about widespread infringement. So the first question, for example, from the Copyright Office to the public is, please provide information regarding specific instances of infringing conduct committed by a state government entity, officer, or employee. Right? So that doesn't really speak to that. That's essentially the Allen v. Cooper case all over again. You know, one specific instance is not enough to show the justifiable widespread conduct that would meet the congruence and proportionality test. So I thought that part was a little bit interesting about the way the Copyright Office even started this whole process in this study. Now, later on in their list of questions, they do try to pose a couple of questions that are a little more about kind of widespread activity, but that's not really their focus in what they've been doing.
I think what they're trying to do, albeit I feel that they failed, but I think what they're trying to do is just get this massive rising tide of complainants, right? Who say, this happened to me and my brother and my sister and my best friend, right? And that would maybe, if you had enough individual instances, they would try to, throw them all in a pot, mix it up, and come up with a widespread showing. I think that they failed at that because the Copyright Alliance also did a study. They say they have 1.8 million members, and only 115 people said yes to a question about whether a state government or governmental actor had violated their copyright or infringed on their copyright. And even in that instance, we don't know that it was done intentionally, and we don't know that it was even an actual violation, right? We don't know if there was a valid defense. So to me, this was a complete failure, right? At least in terms of trying to do that individualized, like, rising tide. The other aspect of it, of course, and one that we had been pointing out, is that if you could show, copyright policies that are infringing, that would show that there's actually state action, right? That the government is condoning infringement. Of course, there's no evidence of that either. And, our university has multiple copyright policies, folks you can talk to, educational policies. We have sanctions in our student code, all of these things that just show quite the opposite, right? That we take copyright very seriously and that we don't tolerate copyright infringement. So I will find it really fascinating to see what the Copyright Office summarizes from these roundtables, because to me, I don't see the evidence there.
Yeah, and I don't either. And I didn't hear any really during the roundtables from folks, both on the state government side and on the private copyright holder side. You know, the particular instances were still just, sort of, singular anecdotes about infringing behavior. And really, even I didn't hear anything about anything even close to the Allen v. Cooper type example, where it was really just sort of out there with no justification, So, for example, here at the University of Illinois, I mean, the number of allegations of copyright infringement that we field in a year is, well, you know, we're talking single digits at most in a year. And that was before the Allen v. Cooper decision. So, you know, at that point, people had the private copyright holders, people had the right to come and, you know, make claims against the university, to press their claims in court if they wanted to. But the reality is that we weren't even getting that many complaints to start with. And so it's really interesting what, I agree with you, I'm going to be very interested to see sort of how the folks in the Copyright Office try to continue to make the case that there is sort of widespread, intentional, you know, serial infringing activity going on in the state governments. Now, you know, what I didn't hear a lot from during these roundtables was input from other state government agencies, sort of the, you know, the what people would think of more as the traditional type state government agency, you know, the Department of Revenue or the Department of Public Health or something like that. The state actors that came to the roundtable and also put in the public comments during the open comment period that you and I provided comment on, it was really the universities, the public universities. And to some extent that makes sense, right? Is that we, you know, we're both the most active producers, generators of copyrighted material through our, you know, our faculty and university activities, and also consumers of copyrighted material for our educational and research purposes. So it does make sense that we're kind of the centerpiece or the center of discussion about state activity related to copyright in general. But I agree with you. I'm a little bit confused as to what they could sort of hang their hat on at the Copyright Office about any evidence of widespread infringing activity by state government.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of interesting, some of the questions they asked about us trying to have our cake and eat it too, right? So, like, one of the questions was, well, you all say at universities that you're not infringing, so why do you need sovereign immunity? And to me, that doesn't really, that question's a little bit unfair, right? Because first of all, are you saying that we should be infringing because we have sovereign immunity? I mean, that's not a good position to take, right? And secondly, right. You know, we need sovereign immunity because it was granted to us by the Constitution. And why was it granted by the Constitution? Because we are guardians of state funds, right? And so therefore, you know, the folks who framed the Constitution did not want state governments to go broke, right? Because of all of these damage lawsuits. And in copyright in particular, the damages get high really fast. If you look at the statutory damage provisions, right? So, you know, a single act of copying one thing can be thousands upon thousands of dollars. And those are taxpayer funds, right? And so we really do need to guard those funds. And it doesn't mean that we take that to say, oh, well, we're just going to ignore copyright. And I think that point was made numerous times that we're not only copyright users, we produce copyright. We have university presses, we have authors, we have students writing things, we have research going on. And so therefore, we want to guard copyright and protect copyright because we benefit from copyright as well. And so I'll be interested to see what the report says. I think maybe you'll have to come and we'll have to debrief after the report comes out and kind of just see what we think of it. But I thought some of the questions, to be honest with you, from the Copyright Office seemed a little bit biased, if you will. Like, it seemed like they were trying to dig up trouble, right? Like,
Sure.
And I know that maybe that was what they felt was their charge, right? Because they were specifically asked. Senator Tillis and was one of the senators who asked them to do this study, and maybe they feel an obligation to copyright owners. But it seemed like at times they were really trying to make what I would say is a mountain out of a molehill, right? One of the questions they asked me in particular was, you know, what does intentional infringement look like? Well, it's not hard to define intentional infringement, right? I mean, it's something that you do on purpose. And I was saying things like, well, if you remove a copyright notice, that seems pretty intentional, right? But on the sure. other hand, that's not all that you need, you know? And when I tried to point out, well, it can't just be intentional. It has to be widespread. It has to be like an institutional policy. I got cut off. So sometimes I felt like, you know, it was almost like they didn't want to hear the counter arguments, right? And I don't know, it made me feel a little bit like, wow, maybe they're just trying to prove this case, and no matter what we say, they're going to say that there's widespread infringement. I really hope that's not true. I mean, I would like to hope that the Copyright Office is being a neutral investigator here, because I think that's their role. And so, like I said, I'll be interested to see what the report says, because I felt that all of the folks who came to speak on behalf of universities and on behalf of government actors and state governments, I thought we did a really great job in demonstrating that we respect copyright and we actually do engage with folks when they come to us with evidence of true infringement. We don't just turn them away and say, oh, we have sovereign immunity, right? And so, yeah, I just didn't see the evidence that they were looking for. I didn't see it. Maybe they saw something I didn't see, but I really didn't see it. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I think I came away with a similar impression that the approach that they were taking, the questions they were asking during the roundtable sessions, were more along the lines of justify to us why we shouldn't take away sovereign immunity again. That it was, you know, rather than sort of an objective, neutral, you know, we are examining the state of affairs with respect to state governments and copyright infringement, you know, something along those lines. It was really much more, as we've talked about here, it was much more of their going in position seemed to be that they think that there is widespread intentional copyright infringement going on by state governments, and they were going to find the evidence to back that up. And what I heard in the roundtable sessions really cut against that narrative. That it was really, you know, and I think our university is a pretty good example of what most, you know, sort of well-behaving universities, and I'm not aware of any that are really misbehaving in this regard, but that, you know, we have, as you said, we have, as a first order, we have people like you. We have, you know, a dedicated copyright librarian to advise students, faculty, and staff about copyright, because we have, you know, we want to show that we are complying with the law, and we also want to be able to protect the copyrighted materials that we generate here. You know, so we have people who advise on and sort of go out and do outreach and explain about copyright law. We have resources on campus. And then in the very few times, again, low single digits, the very few times that we receive allegations of copyright infringement from private copyright holders, we look at those very carefully. You know, we don't just have a, you know, copy paste. You know, this was fair use. You know, I'm talking pre Allen v. Cooper. You know, we don't just say, you know, we didn't just copy paste. This was fair use. Go away. Your allegation is unsubstantiated. That's not our approach. And in the same way, even after Allen v. Cooper, we don't just have a form response email that says state sovereign immunity, go away, you can't sue us, right? We look at each instance We consider the facts around them and walk through a full analysis of how the copyrighted material got placed where it did in the first instance, what the justification was behind the use, you know. And I mean, a lot of times what we're seeing are sort of incidental uses of photographs, right? Because that's kind of the most obvious thing. I mean, there are people that run web crawlers that look for photographs and you know, either image analysis or metadata buried in the photographs they're crawling the web looking for where these photographs have reappeared and then sending, you know, spinning up their machinery to start making claims for damages and the like. And so, you know, when we look at these instances, it's really not a case of intentionally trying to infringe copyright. It's certainly not a case of trying to profit off of it. And in the main, it's, you know, we can find that the usage falls well within fair use standards for educational institutions. And even then, on occasion, you know, our university has still, you know, paid a settlement fee as a result of the use. But we still have to kind of, it's a lot of time, a lot of effort to try to grapple with these allegations. But there's no indication that it's widespread and intentional to the level that really should be a very high bar for abrogating 11th Amendment state sovereign immunity.
Yeah, and I think you raise a point there that I felt was a little bit strange during the roundtable discussions, which is that the burden should really be on those who are attempting to abrogate sovereign immunity, and it shouldn't be on those of us who are, you know, representatives of the state, right? So I felt sometimes that the questions were like, well, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And the reality is that's not the burden, right? I don't have the burden of proof here, right? And so I think that's part of the reason the Allen v. Cooper case came out the way it did, because if you don't go out there and get this evidence, or if the evidence, in my opinion, I don't think that evidence exists, right? If the evidence just doesn't exist, you can't make it up, right? And again, if state actors were behaving so badly that there was a widespread, you know, angry mob, then why did this large survey instrument only receive 115 angry people, right? Out of millions of people. It just, to me, that doesn't add up. And so that suggests to me that there are a lot of people who are contacting, you know, universities or state governments and saying, hey, you took my stuff. And then the response is, oh man, sorry, we're going to take this down. And oops, you know, not, hey, we're mean and we get to do this just because. And again, I do know that those things happen, right? Allen v. Cooper is not a good case example for state government behavior, right? But I also think it's an extreme example. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the day-to-day, you know, behavior. And that's what Congress needs to look at if they're attempting to abrogate sovereign immunity. So this might be a whole nother thing, right? Where we go through more hearings, we get another law, it sits there for a while, right? And then ends up at the Supreme Court again. And is this just a 10-year cycle that we're on? Just repeat? What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible. Yeah. And I mean, you make a great point about the Allen v. Cooper case was not in my mind, not a typical example at all. And because, you know, at least our approach and the approach of my counterparts at other public universities is, again, if we're notified of an issue, we go and look at it, and our usual first reaction is to give the copyright owner, the person making the allegation of infringement, give them the benefit of the doubt and take down the material immediately, right? Is to say, okay, we're going to take this down and then we're going to examine the circumstances around it. you know, unless it's a very clear, you know, well-supported fair use instance to start with, in which we might say, okay, we've already, you know, the way this material was presented, someone thought through the fair use analysis up front. It's sitting there. We're going to leave it there, but we're going to explain that back to the person making the allegation. And the other thing you were just saying, which is a good point, is the evidence. You know, the evidence certainly doesn't exist in any sort of empirical form that I've seen. And one of the questions that I fielded on the roundtable was from the chief counsel of the Copyright Office, Ms. Smith, was trying to compare public universities to private universities. And, you know, I said something to the effect about, well, good luck even trying to find, you know, well-formulated, systematic, empirical data about private universities and their the quantity of allegations and claims of copyright that they field and deal with. But again, what's the point of that comparison? I mean, we are public universities. We're stewards of the public funds. We have an educational mission. I mean, the interesting thing is that in some ways, you know, if you look at the mission of public universities and state governments in general, we should really be kind of pushing the boundary of copyright to say, look, most of what we do is justified by fair use, and you have to prove to us that we've infringed. But we actually don't take that approach. Like, we're very cautious, and with good reason, again, because we want to be respectful of the creative efforts of other people in, you know, photographs, music, movies, etc. And also, we generate a lot of copyright protected material ourselves, and so we have a strong interest in a well functioning, copyright enforcement system. But at the same time, we also have, there's no evidence that the state governments, but the public universities in particular, are sort of these just willy-nilly, reckless, serial copyright infringers.
Yeah. So I really am interested to see what comes out of this and to review the transcript when it's available. I did miss the open Q&A session at the end of the day, so I'd like to go and see what was said there. But in general, I really didn't see a whole lot of evidence to suggest that sovereign immunity really needs to be abrogated, and that there's widespread infringement going on. So it'll be interesting to see. And my other experience with individuals is that most people are just really afraid to violate the law. And even when they have clear, what I would view as clear instances of fair use, some people are just very risk averse and they don't want to even try to engage with fair use. And so, you know, I just think that it's not the norm or the case in general that people are, you know, intentionally infringing copyright. And especially on our campus where those are the folks that I'm engaging with. And so it'll be interesting to see what the conclusions of that roundtable discussion are.
Yeah, I mean, I can even think of a sort of a related example of we have a requirement to provide accommodations for students and staff, but you know, obviously the most important for us as a university are the students, for disability accommodation in the classroom. And, you know, I regularly am getting questions about whether copyright-protected material can be, used and adjusted in the way necessary to make it accessible for someone with a disability. And that's, you know, that's really sad, right? That people are so worried about potential claims, lawsuits related to copyright infringement, that rather than sort of what should be the default answer is, of course we can do this for, you know, students who are visually impaired or hearing impaired in some way to make sure that they have a good quality experience in the classroom equivalent to the other students, you know, that instead they're having to, you know, they're coming to our office and saying, oh, geez, gosh, can we, you know, can we do this? Can we comply with the Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act? Can we comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act? Because we're worried about copyright infringement. And that's, you know, that's a really kind of a sad commentary on the state of things, but it also highlights the fact that people are not, again, they're not out there just, you know, infringing at will and doing it without regard to copyright law. They're much more concerned about copyright infringement than anything else.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. I have not had instances where I've met with people and I've explained copyright law to them and then their response is, I don't care, I'm going to do this anyway, you know, or
right,
something like
course.
That. I haven't had that experience. And so I think it will be, yeah, we'll have to keep our eye on what happens from here on out in this study and, you know, keep on just telling the story of what's really going on at universities. And
yeah.
Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope people found this interesting. I found it really informative to participate in the roundtables. I was so glad I was able to do so because this time we did them remotely. So that made it much easier for everyone to participate. And I appreciate your time talking with me today about it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And like you said, you know, it might be that we end up here, you know, having another discussion in the wake of the Copyright Office issuing their report, and could very well be back in the same position in, you know, another year, 2 years, what have you, of, you know, a new federal law that where they try to kind of fix the failures in the one that was overturned under Allen v. Cooper, and, you know, all of us having, you know, kind of trying to make the case yet again that they haven't met the threshold of showing widespread intentional infringement without regard to the rights of the owners. So we'll see what happens.
We will. And regardless, we'll just keep on informing our users on campus and keep on being good actors, and we'll see what shakes out.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, and you know, for you and for me, you know, Allen v. Cooper didn't really change anything, right? We're still out there thinking about this, trying to inform people, doing a careful analysis of all of the actions of the university. And, you know, we're not just, as you said, we're not just saying, I don't care about copyright now because we have state sovereign immunity. We still care just as much as we did before.
Well, thanks a lot. And I will definitely circle back when we get the results of that roundtable discussion, because I'll find it really fascinating either way, no matter what they say.
Indeed. Yep.
Thanks.
Same here.
Bye.
Take care.